Good morning. Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. Your panel this morning is to my right, Justice Bob McCoy, to my left, Justice Bill Meyer. I'm Leanne Dofano. We have two cases set for oral submission this morning. The rest of the cases are submitted on briefs. So, Deborah, if you'll call the first case, please. Chris?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. There are many issues raised in my client's brief. Today, our time is limited, and therefore I will try to restrict my comments to just a few that I think are the most important to the disposition of this appeal. Small roadmap. I'm first going to address my client's claim for breach of fiduciary duty and why the trial court erred in granting a no-evidence summary judgment on that. I'll then take up the issue of Forbes Leasing's claim for breach of contract for loan royalty agreement number two and explain why the trial court erred in granting traditional summary judgment on that, and then take up Appellee Robert Houchin's affirmative defenses of estoppel and ratification and why the trial court erred in granting traditional summary judgment on that. Time permitting, I will then address the issues of the termination of the license for software, address my client's claim for fraud, and then possibly illegality and any other issue I can work in. First, let me take up my client's claim for breach of fiduciary duty. Here, the basic position is this. The trial court erred in granting summary judgment on that because there are four basic reasons. One, there's a fact issue as to whether Houchin and DiCarlo breached fiduciary duties to my client. There is a fact issue as to whether the rest of the appellees, Gametronics and Leasing, participated in those breaches. There is a fact issue as to whether my client has been injured. And then finally, a fact issue as to whether or not the appellees benefited. I thought it would be best if I used my time to lay out fully the core factual position of my client. And that is, the number one position is, my client believes loan royalty agreement number two to be a fraudulent agreement. What do I mean by that? That it was created sometime in November or December of 2004, and it is a complete forgery. My client never consented to it, never authorized it. Houchin did this, and the appellees did this in order to impose shift liability from Gametronics onto my client. Now, the appellees argue that that is a preposterous argument, couldn't possibly be, and that there's meager circumstantial evidence to support it. We disagree with that, and let me lay out what the factual theory is for that. My client, chairman of the board of directors, Johnny Weaver, and also the vice president, Mark Olmsted, have testified by affidavit and then by deposition that Robert Houchin, who was president of Systems, told them both that Gametronics had gone out and obtained funding from an outside investor, which he later revealed to be Financial, obtained this funding, and it was being provided to Systems in order to build game terminals that would be used to generate royalties to pay back to Gametronics pursuant to the letter of intent. That's what Weaver believed, and that's what Houchin told Weaver. Now, under the letter of intent, Gametronics was entitled to receive a 20% royalty off the win of every machine that used its software. If you recall in the record, there is Schedule 2, which is attached to loan royalty agreement number 2. That schedule shows that if you had 2,000 Hello Money terminals out there working, the appellees all believed, including Robert Houchin, that that was going to generate $120 million in gross revenue. Earning 20% off $120 million means that Gametronics was looking to make $24 million off the deal. It's not unreasonable to believe that Gametronics went out there, obtained funding so that it could give it to Systems to build terminals so that it could earn royalties that it could then use to pay back the loan. That's what Houchin convinced Weaver and Olmsted that was going on. Olmsted's testimony is a shade different. He testified that, in fact, Robert Houchin, when Olmsted questioned Houchin about the deal, that, in fact, Houchin had told Olmsted that Systems had agreed to pay a small percentage of royalty to help Gametronics pay the money back. But any inconsistency in the testimony just goes to show that Houchin had, in fact, convinced my clients that that's what the deal was. So in going forward from that point, you have to understand that my client believes loan royalty agreement to be the true agreement. It was disclosed in November of 2004. Following that disclosure of that agreement, certain things transpired, as the court should be well aware of from reading the briefs. First, Mr. Houchin made a bid. There was sort of a dispute about management and ownership of the company, and that arose when it was disclosed that, in fact, there were less Hello Money terminals than had been represented by Mr. Houchin. There is in the record a schedule of machines, and it shows in one column that there are 1,000 of them, and in another column shows that there were only 400 showing on their system that actually showed up. That was the first fact that was disclosed. There were fewer machines, fewer money-making assets. After that, following that, it was also disclosed or learned from that fact that systems had paid royalties to Gametronics based on an inflated number of machines. Mr. Houchin was questioned about that. After that, negotiations began, and the tenor of those negotiations, as testified by Mr. Weaver, is that Mr. Houchin wanted to buy the Weavers out of systems. Mr. Weaver declined. Then what happened? Loan royalty agreement number one surfaced for the first time. Mr. Houchin showed it and said, see, here's the deal between Gametronics, and this is how all these terminals came into being. But of course, Mr. Weaver was unmoved to sell the business because of the fact that loan royalty agreement does not make systems liable. That is loan royalty agreement number one. After that, another month passes, and then all of a sudden, loan royalty agreement number two shows up. This one makes systems obligated to repay the loan. Now, my client's position is that the two loan royalty agreements by itself would merit a trial. There's a genuine dispute about whether or not which agreement is the true agreement. The agreement itself, if you look at the two of them, systems is a borrow under number two, but not under number one. It covers the same subject matter, that is, the creation of 2,000 Hello Money terminals. But oddly, one is witnessed, that is, the one prior in time is witnessed. The one later in time is not witnessed at all. Interesting fact. And then also, the terms are different. Both call for a 25% royalty until the principal of the loan is repaid, and then they differ when you get down to the perpetual royalty. One says 6.5%, that's the one on which Gametronics is obligated. The other one, 10%, the one on which Systems is obligated. That's suspicious enough alone. My client should be entitled to have a trial and have a jury decide which one is the true agreement of the parties. But that would be just taking that out of context. Let's put it all back into context. When you put the history and the sequence of events together, there is evidence which merits a trial as to whether or not loan royalty agreement number two is fraudulent. What is that? Well, again, it is Weaver and Olmsted's testimony that Robert Houchin told them. They've thrown their hat in the swearing match ring. They've come down and said, this is what Robert Houchin told us. He told us that Gametronics went out there and got this money, that Gametronics was responsible for repaying it. That excludes the possibility, plus their testimony that they didn't even know about the agreement until December of 2004. That excludes the possibility that Houchin had authority to do this, because they've testified they didn't know about it. It excludes the possibility that there was any apparent authority whatsoever for Houchin to do this, because Houchin told them that Gametronics was the one responsible for it. Put that in context with the other evidence, that is that when the money was actually advanced, Houchin didn't use it to make terminals. He made less than 400. He testified, sort of equivocally, that he wasn't real sure where all the money went. It may have been used to help finance systems move into a new building, may have been used to create eight-liner machines. Houchin wasn't sure. And remember, this is the president who brought the money in. He's the one who owes fiduciary duties of loyalty, obedience, and care to his principal systems. He's the one who's supposed to account for where the money went. And when his deposition was taken, he just said, well, I don't really know. I can't be sure where it went. That's the state of the record. Then you add in the fact of Houchin tried to buy systems from my client. And then afterwards, when that didn't come to fruition, when the Weavers could not be coaxed into selling under threat of either having to pay back loan royalty agreement number two, that is $3 million, or having 2,000 of their game terminals seized, when that didn't work, what did he do? He left Systems. He transferred his interest to DiCarlo of Gametronics. He went out and, at least into the Tarrant County records, filed to have a partnership with Gametronics, became a partner of the very one of the parties to these agreements, and then later on was appointed the special agent for the repossession of Hello Money terminals by the creditor. So there is sufficient evidence, we believe, or Systems believes, to merit a trial as to whether loan royalty agreement number two is fraudulent. That is the core of our breach of fiduciary duty claim, and that core inherent fact issue drives all the rest of my client's positions. Loan royalty agreement number two, leasing obtained a summary judgment on its breach of contract claim. Obviously, if loan royalty agreement number two is fraudulent, it's a fraudulent agreement, it cannot be enforced against my client. The same thing is true for the tortious interference with contract claim. If, in fact, loan royalty agreement number two is fraudulent, then the appellees had no legal right whatsoever to seize my client's terminals or to interfere with their business. So that's why I have spent time on that one. I will leave to the brief my other client's breach of fiduciary duty claims for misappropriation of assets. I think that's well laid out. Let me focus for a moment, then, upon the other issues, and that is injury to my client and benefit to the appellees and the evidence that shows participation. If, in fact, my client's successful in proving that loan royalty agreement number two is fraudulent, then I don't think that there will be much of a factual dispute about whether the appellees participated in the breach by Houchin. Why? Well, because, again, my client's core theory is that this agreement was manufactured sometime in November or December of 2004. If that's the case, it was done purposely. You have loan royalty agreement number one, which is the true agreement. Loan royalty agreement number two was drafted for the purpose of shifting liability away from Gametronics and placing it upon Systems. Why? Well, my client truly believes that the reason why was to put Houchin in a position, make his employer swallow a poison pill, and then either put him in a position to where he can make a bid to buy the company or else help stage a hostile takeover by the people that Houchin eventually went into business with. If, in fact, a jury were to disagree or this court were to determine that the evidence is too meager as the appellees claim to support an inference that loan royalty agreement number two is fraudulent, then there still is a problem for the appellees, and that is this. Because of Olmstead's testimony and Weaver's testimony, there is a fact issue about whether or not Houchin had any authority. It was a hidden agreement. That's what their testimony is. That testimony cannot be disregarded by the trial court. The appellees encourage the court to say that it's incredible, it's disingenuous. This court has no power to make credibility calls. So even if this court determined that there wasn't enough evidence to show that or to raise a fact issue as to whether loan royalty agreement number two was fraudulent, then at a minimum, there's a question about whether Houchin had any authority. I see that my time is quickly dwindling. Let me move on from there.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
What is there in the record that reflects the stock ownership percentages and your client by the various stockholders?
First, here's what the evidence is. First, there are the articles of incorporation, which you will find attached to my client's responses to the motion for summary judgment. The articles of incorporation list Dina Weaver and Johnny Weaver as the only two owners and board of directors. Also, in Mr. Olmstead's deposition testimony, he is asked whether or not he was an owner, and he says no. And then he says that he believes that at the time in question, the only owners were Weaver, Johnny Weaver, and Dina Weaver. So that's the evidence that, in fact, they were the only owners.
What percentage?
Percentage, 50-50.
Thank you.
There is something that I'm confused about.
Yes.
All right. Forbes Hutton Leasing.
Correct.
At the time they filed suit, what was their interest? Did they not acquire their interest after, or at least part of the interest after the suit was filed?
Their position is that they obtained financial, Forbes Hutton Financial's interest. That is loan royalty agreement number 2. The signatory on that is Forbes Hutton Financial. They claim that they obtained that right to pursue that claim by assignment during the litigation.
After suit was filed?
After suit was filed.
Do you have to have standing at the time the suit is filed?
You do have to have standing at the time suit is filed.
So I'm confused about their standing at the time suit was filed. If they acquired their interest during the litigation.
They did not have standing at the time they filed suit. And that is our position. Number one, they didn't have standing. And the most egregious thing that happened is that the issue of standing was raised in the summary judgment proceeding that occurred shortly before the case was set for trial. It was only then that the assignment materialized. During the entire course of the case, Financial was not a party, not subject to discovery, not involved. And then at the last minute, an assignment comes through, and voila, leasing attempts to obtain standing. It's one of the reasons why some issues in the case just weren't developed. So it has been very harmful to my client that it has come that way, but they did not have standing when they first filed suit. The yellow light has gone off. Are we on the red light? Very well.
Here. You're toast. Just a second. Any other questions?
All right.
Okay, that's it. Thank you. Okay.
May it please the court. Russell Barton on behalf of Robert Houchin. Game Systems claims that the loan royalty agreement signed by Game Systems is fictitious, is a sham, that Houchin was not authorized to sign it, and that it was even created after Houchin left the company. From 2005 to right before the summary judgment hearing in 2008, Game Systems pleaded that the loan royalty agreement was valid, and those pleadings were verified by Mr. Weaver. For example, in the second amended answer and counterclaim, which is at page 138 of the clerk's record, in paragraph 16, Game Systems is talking about an agreement in addition to the letter of intent document. And Game Systems pleads, under this agreement, Forbes Hutton Financial and Gametronics were to loan money to Game Systems to be used to purchase certain equipment. Next sentence, paragraph 17. Sometime on or about May 7th, 2004, Forbes Hutton Financial, Gametronics, and Game Systems, through Houchin, executed a loan royalty agreement with regards to this loan. Paragraph 20. The machines purchased with funds loaned under the loan agreement with Gametronics and Forbes Hutton Financial were placed in the field using the software. At the temporary injunction hearing in June of 2005, Game Systems Counsel told the trial court, and this is at page 337 of the record, that one of the disputes was that the plaintiffs were claiming that more had been loaned by Forbes Hutton to our client than our records show. It is uncontroverted that after Weaver and Olmstead claimed that they learned all about the loan royalty agreement, they made $100,000 in payments on it. They continued to use the terminals that had been funded by these advances in order to make money for the company. For 3 years, they pleaded that the loan royalty agreement was valid, and they never denied execution of the loan royalty agreement by a sworn pleading denying Houchin's authority to sign it. And under Rule 93, the loan royalty agreement and Houchin's authority is proved up as a matter of law. And I would refer the court to the Methodist Hospitals versus Corporate Communicators case at 806 Southwest 2nd, 879. These uncontroverted actions by Game Systems after they even claim that they learned about the agreement speak much, much louder than the conclusory words in Weaver's summary judgment affidavit. The trial court properly granted summary judgment on Game Systems' claims that the loan royalty agreement is fraudulent or was not authorized. None of Game Systems' other allegations of harm hold up. They claim that Houchin misused some of the money, like using money for the company to move into a new office building or on other projects. But there's no evidence that Weaver and Olmsted did not know about it or approve it or that they objected to it. Weaver's affidavit is silent. This is not an instance where Weaver and Olmsted were passive investors. It's a closely operated company. Weaver, Houchin, and Olmsted were all involved in the daily operations of this company. And for Game Systems to contend now that they didn't know how money was being spent for the company to move into to offices is just absurd. There's no evidence of damages. There is no evidence of the fair market value of any of the software. And that's the measure of damage for a misappropriation conversion type of claim. Game Systems' own bankruptcy schedules, and this is at page 519. Game Systems valued its interest in all software written by the software developer at zero. They said it wasn't worth, that their interest wasn't worth anything. There's no evidence of lost net profits or revenues regarding the distributors in Alabama. There's no evidence that Houchin interfered or had anything to do with Game Systems distributors in Alabama. There's no evidence of any compensation or profit by Houchin. There's no factual support to Weaver's conclusory statement that hundreds of thousands of dollars was paid to the software developer.
And Mr. Martin?
Yes.
Was there $150,000 a week drawn on the $3 million note?
Your Honor, I believe what the record reflects is that there was for a period of time.
How much?
And then I don't have, there is a schedule.
Well, if there was $150,000 a week drawn and the $150,000 were not spent on corporate purposes, would that be damages?
That could be, but there's no contention that this was not being spent for corporate purposes. Even their contention is that the money was being spent for corporate purposes.
But not to build Hello Money machines.
That's what they contend. And let me just briefly point out about the 400 terminals allegation. Now it's even less than 400 terminals. There's no evidence in the record that explains the spreadsheets and what they mean. And they certainly are not audited statements, as the appellant claims in its reply brief. These are emails between the lender and Mr. Houchin asking questions. The schedule at page 760 of the record in the quote-unquote showing column, it reflects about 900 machines. And basically they are contending that these emails between the lender and the borrower prove fabrication. Well, why would a lender fabricate terminals that didn't exist. It just doesn't make sense.
You're saying there's no issue of fact? It sounds to me like you're saying there are issues of fact.
With respect to the number of terminals, the point, Your Honor, it boils down to their only claim of harm is that they don't want to have to repay the money that they admittedly received and admit that they owe. And so there's still no harm for that. Game Systems' response, summary judgment response, lives or dies with Weaver's conclusory affidavit. As I pointed out at the beginning, it conflicts with his own prior sworn allegations. It simply is one conclusion after another in an attempt by Game Systems to do a complete 180 from its theory of the case in order to prevent a summary judgment. Trial court didn't buy it, properly rejected it, and granted the summary judgment. And we would request that the court affirm the summary judgment in favor of Houchin.
Mr. Barton, are you in agreement with what Mr. Nicholson said about the ownership of stock being equally split between the Weavers and the Houchin before Houchin's made their assignment?
I'm not in agreement with that. I don't believe that the Articles of Incorporation set out stock ownership.
And I agree with that. I'm asking you what you know about any summary judgment evidence that reflects the stock ownership.
I'm not aware that the summary judgment record reflects the actual ownership.
Thank you, sir.
May it please the court. My name is Kern Lewis. I'm with Foreman Lewis and Hutchison. I am the only attorney in the room who has the benefit of having been involved in this case from day one. I am the person who filed the original application for temporary injunction on behalf of leasing. And because of that, I would like to address your question, Justice Delfino, on standing.
Yeah, because I'm confused about how the there's leasing and then there's financial, and it looks like to me leasing is making its claim as though it had standing to claim for financial at the beginning of the lawsuit.
No, ma'am.
And okay, tell me about it.
At the beginning of the lawsuit, it was brought by leasing, which held the rights under the equipment lease to go and seize the equipment. There was no claim for damages, monetary damages at all. Okay. All leasing was seeking was an injunction against Game Systems from moving the equipment around while they were trying to repossess it.
Okay.
So leasing had the standing to bring that claim.
All right.
Then, when that was not successful and Game Systems filed counterclaims and asserted a breach of the agreement, this type of thing, that's when the monetary issues became involved and financials claim was at stake. Leasing took an assignment of financials right to recover under the contract.
That happened later.
But leasing originally had standing because they were the person with the right to repossess the equipment.
All right.
And that's how the lawsuit was brought.
Okay. That was what I was confused about. At what point they did have standing to make claims on behalf of financial. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Lewis?
Yes, sir.
In the document entitled Assignment of Rights Under Loan Royalty Agreement that's attached to one of the appellee's briefs, I think it's the one that was for Forbes Hutton Leasing, Inc., there stated in the assignment that the amount advanced was $2,268,847.37. Is that how much money is claimed to have been advanced under the $3 million loan?
Yes, but and the reason it's not exactly $3 million is because at the same time they were advancing money, Game Systems was supposed to have already begun its repayment schedule of some money, and so they started offsetting.
Okay.
And so in reality, there was $3 million probably advanced. However, because of the illegality issue that came up, the Alabama Supreme Court's opinion in that, we made the determination that we were not entitled to seek any profits from the transaction, but only a rescission and a return of our original investment. because if it's an illegal deal, nobody's entitled to profits. So we only asked for our original principal back. I'm just about out of time. There was one other thing I wanted to mention to the court, the timing of all this. We were in the middle, in the bankruptcy court, we were in the middle of seeking to have a trustee imposed over Game Systems when the Alabama Supreme Court decision came out, and they abruptly dismissed their bankruptcy, obviously to try to get away from having a trustee imposed. So we went back to the state court. This summary judgment was heard 7 days before trial was to begin. At that time, and it's mentioned in the reporter's record, their disclosure responses in discovery had not named any experts on damages, and they had not set forth any damage calculations. So now all of a sudden they're saying, oh, we could have proved to a jury all of these damages. They couldn't have even put on evidence of damages. And the trial judge, Judge Lowe, knew that because it was brought up at the hearing. We don't know where they're going to put up these damages. They haven't answered disclosures. All they had said in their disclosure response was approximately $4 million and provided no calculations. And in their experts, which is in the record at page 207 and 211, they had only named Mr. Aldrich to testify as attorney's fees. So they didn't have an expert on damages. They couldn't have proved up any damages, even if they were legal. And the Alabama Supreme Court's decision, and asking when he gets back up here if his client continued in business in Alabama after the Alabama Supreme Court decision. He didn't. They immediately stopped. Everybody stopped doing business in Alabama when that decision came out. So the deal was illegal under Alabama law. They ceased operating in Alabama. They couldn't recover any of these profits. So even with regard to the loan royalty agreement, which one controlled, there was no damages that were legally recoverable. And the other thing I want to point out very briefly, his argument about the two loan royalty agreements. Under the one that he's calling the first loan royalty agreement, his client's not even a party. So how can he say that that is the agreement that somehow controlled the transaction by which his client received all this money? It's not. That was a deal where they originally thought about structuring it where Forbes would loan the money to Gametronics and then Gametronics would advance it. And that didn't happen. Their own banking records showed that they were getting the money and they were making payments back to Forbes Hutton, not Gametronics. So that's a non-issue.
Anybody have any questions?
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Kern. Chris.
Thank you, Your Honor. A couple of points I'd like to respond to. First, as to the lack of verification, Rule 93 argument, I have some very fine lawyers on the other side who have brought up an issue that the court ought to look at, and here's my client's position as to that. If you go search the pleadings, you'll find this. I believe that my client's live pleading at the time was its third amended answer, third amended counterclaim, third amended petition against third-party defendant and application for temporary injunction. If you go back to the second amended, there actually is a verified denial denying authority to execute agreements by Mr. Houchin. Unfortunately, inadvertently, it was left off in filing of the third. That issue had already been raised, the issue of authority, but here's the most important thing that I will say on that issue. Rule 93 verified denials are like all other pleading defects. They can be waived. In this case, the lack of verification was waived. Why was it waived? Well, there are pleadings, motions, and, of course, evidence submitted on the issue of authority, which came in without objection from the other side. What am I talking about? Again, in the third amended petition and answer, my client says that Mr. Houchin and the appellees attempted to dispose of defendant's assets without authorization. That was in the pleadings. Then in the actual summary judgment response, if you'll look at page 716 of the record, you will find under loan royalty agreement payments, you will find this statement, a genuine issue of material fact exists as to whether loan royalty agreement 2 was a fraudulent contract. Then after that, you will find Mr. Weaver's affidavit in which he says that he never was informed about loan royalty agreement number 2, that first time he ever learned about it was in December of 2004. Mr. Olmstead's deposition testimony was actually attached by the appellees in which he said that Mr. Houchin affirmatively represented that, in fact, Gametronics was the one who went out and got this money and that, in fact, Systems was not the one liable for its repayment. So the issue of authority was raised, and the lack of verification was waived. And what cases do you need to look at? Let me give you a couple. You need to look at Wetzel versus Sullivan, King, and Sabum. It's out of the Houston First District Court, a 1988 case. Its number, you can find it at 745 Southwest 2nd, page 78. Also, it cites Golosnik versus Golosnik out of the San Antonio Court, a 1985 case. It's at 685 Southwest 2nd, 379. Then there's Crystal Media Incorporated versus HCI Acquisition Corp. If you'll look at 773 Southwest 2nd, 732, you will find that a lack of verification can be waived when evidence is submitted on the issue without objection. Next, they also argue about superseded pleadings. Again, my client's live pleading brought up the issue of authority, so the superseded pleadings are mere evidence, but they're not conclusive evidence. Mr. Houchin bore the burden under his ratification and estoppel defenses to prove conclusively that my client benefited from the transaction, and our position is absolutely not. We never got $3 million. We never got 2,000 Hello Money machines. We could never have accepted the benefit of the contract and gone out and paid the royalties as they claim, and further, we were not in a position to rescind. Those were our two options upon revelation of the agent's disloyalty. We weren't in a position to rescind because there weren't 2,000 Hello Money terminals to give back. There wasn't the cash proceeds. Mr. Houchin testified he doesn't know where the money went. Ultimately, the global idea in this case, the one that the court unfortunately has to wrestle with, is who ought to bear the risk of loss here when you have an unauthorized agent doing these undisclosed acts? And our position is the law is this. It falls upon the third parties that were dealing with the agent. They did not inquire as to his authority. There's no evidence in the record as to that. They bear the risk, and we believe that there's evidence raising a fact issue as to their collusion with the agent. And in that circumstance, they have no right to make a claim against us whatsoever. It's their fault. They bear the risk. A couple last points as to the 50-50 ownership issue. There's some question about whether or not I made myself clear. It's 50-50 ownership between Johnny Weaver and Dina Weaver. The Houchins don't own anything. At least that's what the record says. I understand that Houchin assigned his stock in the company over to Mr. DiCarlo, but there's nothing in the record saying what actually was owned. We don't know. Now, as to the repayment of funds, that's how they characterize it. Mr. Kern Lewis of Leasing says that it was just a mere repayment of funds, that is the money less than $3 million, or the difference between $3 million and $2.26. They say it's repayment of funds. Of course, we say it's false return of capitals because there were fewer Hello Money machines. They were using an inflated schedule to pay royalties on. And then finally, as to damages and experts, in this case, I don't know what an expert was necessary for. Our whole position is that Mr. Houchin signed a contract without authority, then he went out there and intentionally breached it. He put us in a no-win situation. We've been damaged. We have a $3 million liability on paper. We've been hit with a $1.7 million judgment. We've incurred attorney's fees, court costs, all because of the agent's unauthorized actions. We have been damaged. We have been injured. So with that, I will end my comments unless the bench has any questions for me. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, we appreciate your argument. It's been very helpful. The briefing's been very helpful. And your case is submitted. Thank you. You're free to go about your business or to stay here and listen to the next case if you'd like.